I want to welcome you again to another hour of Practical Christianity. And this morning our lesson is on how to rediscover love. I think there are some principles that we can learn and that we can practice. So come, and in your mind and with your heart, follow along and let us discover together the rediscovery of love. Sometimes we might feel to rediscover love would fit into the category of the many, many generalizations that we have when we think about love. We say that love is a many-splendored thing, and love is what makes the world go round, and we can vent our problems and our frustrations, and then we will hear people say, well, love will solve that. But maybe we have to find a new definition, or at least a new activity, a new way of thinking about love. Because the Christian religion is based upon the premise that love is the greatest power in the world, and that love is very real. So let us now, for these few moments, see if we can't, whether we are Buddhist or Baptist or Roman Catholic or Lutheran, let us see if we can find out what Jesus meant when he said, they will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. There's a deep frustration, I think, in all of us, and it is to find out and discover this love. I suppose that one of the things that I hear most from people when they come to me for counseling, and one of the things I've said often myself is, well, why did I get hostile? Why did I say the things I shouldn't have? Why did I do what now I look back on and wish I hadn't? Well, there was nothing else to do, but this is not true. There are other alternatives to strife, and that alternative is love. But maybe we have to have a new understanding of it. It seems to me that the greatest undeveloped resource of mankind is the undeveloped love, that we all have the capacity to live through and with. What is this mysterious energy of love? Well, to me, life and love are cannot be separated. They are one and the same. Love, for instance, is probably the most primitive form of life. And we find even in the most primitive forms of material life that life is continually working to expand itself and to merge itself in a sense of unity, to expand its potential that it has within us. And to me, that's what each of us are trying to do. Love is that activity that expands us, expands our awareness of what life really is. I'm told I'm having trouble with my sound system here, so I'll move it down there. I suppose the apparent lack of love in life is really the lack of self-control that most of us haven't been able to put forth yet. It is the apparent lack of self-knowledge. Because I believe we can learn about ourselves and we can learn about love and we can practice it just like we would practice any other activity of life, and we can practice it toward perfection. Remember this, that the kingdom of heaven that Jesus talked about is the kingdom of expansion. When you are expanding your awareness, when you are expanding your capacity to do, you are happy. When you are contracting, you are unhappy. And so you can almost judge by the barometer of your feelings whether you are in an expansive mood or in a contracting mood. Now, we learn from the Christian scripture that love casts out fear. Love casts out fear because it expands us. Jesus said, the yeast that goes into the loaf of bread. This is the expansion consciousness of love. And each one of us must find it. Luther Burbank, if you've read about his life, you'll find out that he loved. He expanded himself. And he would tell a weed or whatever he wanted to grow in a different way, he would tell that weed what he wanted it to do. I want you to do this and this and this and this. And he would plant it and love it and bless it. And
the weed would perform as Mr. Burbank would want it to. So I think from that we are finding out that there's no such thing as a green thumb. It's a red heart. It's a spirit of love within us that we can what? We can expand our ability and we can increase our realm of communication to all parts of life. I read in the Reader's Digest a few years ago, and I wish I'd have saved the particular issue and article about a woman who was a school teacher and being honored after teaching school 40 years. She was honored because from her particular little one-room schoolhouse, a tremendous number of people were able to pass through that little schoolhouse and they became very prominent in whatever profession or in whatever realm of life they were working in. And so at the honoring ceremony, they lined up and they all told her what a wonderful teacher she was. And she realized, and they told her how prominent and how well they had done in life. And she said, well, it wasn't because of the academic excellence in my little schoolroom. And she said, I suppose the only way I can verify and explain what happened is that I loved every one of you. And they agreed. This gives us evidence of, for instance, a doctor friend of mine who went into a home, and the moment he entered in, he felt the oppression, he felt the anger and the hostility, and he examined a little child about 7 years old who was having great trouble breathing. Later on, tests proved that the child really didn't have anything organic or malfunctioning. It was simply that the child's respiratory system was gasping for something. It showed up as the gasping and the desire for more oxygen. But what it was really the gasping for life, because life and love are synonymous. And in the atmosphere between the mother and the father and the hostility between the two of them, the child was being strangled. It wasn't long before the mother and father were able to realize this with the help of the good doctor. And the child improved and came back to normal. I think we're finding out more and more that, for instance, asthma is an emotional condition. It has very little to do with any outer thing. And I think eventually we're going to find that most diseases, maybe all of them, can be healed through love. We say what the world needs is love. Of course it does. And this is one of those religious generalizations that I'm famous for making, and I'm going to continue to say what the world needs is love. But what we each one individually need is a personal understanding. Maybe we need to get rid of some of the myths that we call love. We sometimes think about love as the weather. We say, I hope it's a loving day, like I hope it doesn't rain or it does rain. There's no such thing as chance in love. We say, for instance, oh, I fell in love, as if it was something unpredictable or that it happened by accident. That's not true. Love is very predictable. This world is run by law, and we can see that love is just as predictable as hate or any other attribute that we have. Of course, we find that if we think love, if we think we just fall in love or we just happen to be in love or I love you and I don't love you, we can convince ourselves of that. But all we have to do is think about it and we realize that this really isn't so. If we look at every person who has a problem, and there's a problem in each of our personalities, we're in the process of growing, all of us. But if we look at the people that really have problems, if we were even to walk down the prison block into each cell, you know what we'd hear? If we could hear with the ears of love, we would hear those people crying out that they need love. The whole world is crying out for more love. We see so much hostility around the conference tables of peace. We find hostility within ourselves. We go out driving. We find it. We find it everywhere. And yet every one of those people that disgust us the most, or even when we disgust ourselves with a lack of love and a growing tendency to be hostile, yet there is that within us, as within others, that cries out and says, won't someone please love me? I believe the deepest need of man is not to be loved. The deepest need of man is to express love. And I'll tell you why. We find out that, for instance, in Eric Fromm's book, The Art of Loving, he says this: love is not only is not primarily a relationship to a specific person. It is an attitude, an orientation of character, which determines the relatedness of a person to the world as a whole, not toward one object of love. If a person loves only one person and is indifferent to the rest of his fellow men, his love is not love, but an extension of his ego. And I can see this so often. We pick out one person and we so closely identify to them, or a few people, we so closely identify to them that they become an ego extension. And of course, this is not love. So we find that we must, well, maybe we're like an artist, a person who wants to be an artist. And they don't study painting. They don't practice painting. They just simply say, someday, when I come across that perfect object, I will paint it and it will be beautiful. But that isn't the case. If you're going to paint, you have to practice. And you have to work with it. And you'll find out then you can paint a tree as well as a person, or a car as well as a cat. Because the desire and the attributes come out of you. So we can't just wait for the object to come along, that certain person we're going to love forever. Nor can we wait, if we're an artist, for that object to come along so that we can paint it perfectly. It just won't work that way, and it never has. If I truly love one person, I must love all persons, or I really don't love anyone. Young people, every generation has its way and its thematics of communicating with life. And one of the most wonderful things, that words that I know of, I heard a young man say the other day, he said, "Boy, does she turn me on." And I think that's wonderful, because that's graphic. We have to be turned on. There has to be something that happens to us. I don't know what turns you on. And I'm talking about turning you on with love. Now, you can say, if there's one thing I can't stand, and then you tell me what it is. And whenever that happens, it turns you on. It turns on your hostility or your anger or your judgment. No, we have to learn to be turned on. Turned on with love. We turn on our ability to express something. Don't go around crying out, "I wish I had somebody to love me." That isn't going to do you any good. What you have to learn is that you have to be able to open yourself to allow love, which is God, to flow through you. Then you create an environment. You create an atmosphere where other people can love easier. But first of all, you have to learn to allow this energy, this life force, to flow through you. And it can't flow through you if you're in judgmental attitudes. You can't love people you judge. The people you love, you don't judge. That's why you love them, and that's why they love you. Because you don't judge. Jesus said, "Love your enemies and pray for those who despitefully use you, that you may become sons of your Father." If you're a son, then you have a source. But if you begin to judge, You contract yourself. The great need is to be loved. Not to be loved by somebody else, but to allow the love of reality, reality itself, to flow through you. Many years ago, when I first started in the ministry, we had a guest speaker, and I was the assistant in this church. It was a large church, and it was packed to the sides of the sanctuary. And the man who spoke was Star Daly. Star Daly was probably, well, Glenn Clark says that Star Daly is probably the greatest living Christian. And I would agree after hearing him. He's written a book called Love Will Open Prison Doors, and he was a prisoner. He was a convict. He had gone down for the third time, and they had given him a life sentence. He was not only mean to everybody, he was mean to the guards, his fellow inmates, he was mean to life in general. And the only way they could really keep Star Daly out of trouble was put him down in what they call the hole, in solitary isolation. And there he sat. And one day the realization came to him of how strong hate was. And he wondered within himself, for some reason, if hate was that strong, was there anything to contradict it? Was there anything greater than hate? And he thought, of course, of love. Well, something happened to Star Daly, and he began to realize that love was greater than hate, because he had hated so much that it was beginning to fail to sustain him. And so he began to love. Well, something happened about this time, it's in his book, that the warden of this institution, who really just knew of him only as a person and as an object, something said to the warden, why don't you take Star Daly out of isolation? He's been there long enough. Give him another chance. And so Star Daly was taken up and put in a cell, and there he became a model prisoner, and 10 years later he was released from prison. And since that time, he's dedicated his life to talking about love. Love is the greatest power in the world, and love opens prison doors, and there isn't a one of us that isn't in some kind of prison. It may be a one-room cell, or it may be a great prison, but we're there. And the only way we can escape from ourselves and our own prejudice and fear is to allow this force to flow through us. The paradox of the awareness of life and what I call the unity of life, and this is why I like the word unity, to be in Christian unity. The paradox of this unity that we are in is that it needs clarification. Now, there is but one mind, one great whole in which all things are and in and spring out of. Thus, all men are created equal. However, there is a diversity in unity. Unity does not mean oneness. It means oneness. It does not mean sameness. When we are in unity, we are not all the same, but we are one. And the interesting thing is, scientifically, there isn't one atom in this universe that touches another. Every atom is separate. I suppose it's like Gabram said, let there be spaces in our togetherness. That we don't have to be one. There can be spaces in our togetherness. We can find our unity of purpose. We can live in the world as a happy family. But that doesn't mean that we're all the same. It means that we have oneness in our diversity. And I like this. We find our more orthodox Christian friends talking about being born again. And I think that's a very legitimate saying. Maybe we should talk about it more. The first birth, we were born in isolation, the birth out of our mother's womb. But the second birth is the birth of letting go our aloneness and coming in and transcending into the power of love, into the ability to let flow out of us. You see, when we're born, we're told, from the moment we can be told, that we must go out and get. But there comes a time when we are born again, when it's a matter of allowing the potential that we really are coming out of us. We are not looking for people to love us. We are looking for people to love. We are looking to allow love to flow out of us in all directions. We are not saying, you deserve my love and you don't deserve my love. We are not saying, oh, you're the same as I am and you're different. No. In our unity of love, in our unity of life, we are allowing this force to come out of us. Therefore, we're happy. You're happy when you're loved because you're living. You are allowing this energy to flow out of you without any judgment, without trying to find somebody just like you. Everything in the universe is governed by impersonal law. If you were to build a house and you were to wire the house with wires so that electricity could come in and you get it all wired and then one day you flip on the switch and the light doesn't come on, you don't curse the light. You realize there's a screw loose somewhere and you go back and you check everything out, because if you wire it up right, the light will go on. But it isn't the light's fault if it doesn't go on. So stop blaming other people in your life if they don't turn on to you. You're wired wrong. Sometimes we sit down with other people and we look at them from our different points of view. And that won't work. We have to look at them from our points of contact. Otherwise, we're two separate identities sitting across the table, looking at each other and telling each other our point of view. It's our point of contact. You only can touch people when you allow yourself to create the environment of this energy, this non-judgmental, this unity, even though in its diversity, there is a unity, an awareness that comes over us all. I would say to each one of us, and I certainly listen to this myself, I would say to each one of us, the level of your relationships with people is a very good barometer of where you are in consciousness. If you're having problems with other people, it means that you are not releasing the energy of reality, the energy of life. If you are having problems with other people out here, It means that you are not loving as you should be, to the degree that you should be. Because no one can give you a problem when you are loving. Nothing can touch you. It even casts out all the fear and the contracting states of mind that may be in you. If you were accidentally knocked over by someone who wasn't looking where they were going, and you found yourself flushed with anger, and you stood up, and you began to say all kinds of mean things to them, like, why don't you look where you're going, and a few other very choice things that I wouldn't mention. You should ask yourself, why am I responding in such anger? Remember I said they accidentally knocked you over. Why, you should ask yourself the question, why am I responding with such anger? You should really get up after you've responded with the anger and all. You should get up and you've examined yourself. Get up and take them by the hand and say, thank you, you've really done me a great favor. Because you've let me see where I am in consciousness. You've let me realize what's going on inside of me that I wasn't aware of until you came along and knocked me over accidentally. Or even if they did it on purpose. Because you're going to learn something about yourself. And anything you can learn about yourself, that's great. Because then you know where to work. That's why I say it's so important that we are aware of our motives, that we are aware of why we're doing things. Henry Drummond, who wrote the little book, The Greatest Story Ever Told, said, life is full of opportunities for learning love. The world is not a playground, it is a schoolroom. Life is not a holiday, but an education. And the one eternal lesson for all of us is, how better can we love? How better can we love? Occasionally we find some group or nation or some individual who will hold to a very fixed position in life. And they usually say, it's the principle of the thing. Well, what they're really doing, this is simply a rationalization of being very willful. It is not the principle of the thing. Because love allows us to move in different directions. Love allows us different standpoints. Perhaps one of the great miracles, when you realize that this force is flowing through you, and you can, as I say, get this force to flow through you if you'll stop being judgmental, it's the insight that we have. It's the insight the mother has of her son, to see the great man in him, even when she has to discipline him as a little boy. This is what love does. Love gives us that insight. It's the gardener who's planting the seeds that can already see the flowers. This is what love does to us. It lets us see a panorama. It lets us see a vision that no other state of consciousness will allow us to see. When the relationship of marriage occasionally bogs down in discord, the persons involved temporarily lose sight of that vision they once saw of each other. They don't see the potential anymore. They begin to judge, and the more they judge, the more they cut themselves off from this oneness, this unity that they can create between themselves, even though they're both different. I think consciousness is the key to all of life. Whatever you meet will, and whomever you meet, will respond to you at that level of the state of your consciousness. Can you visualize this? This is hard. Can you visualize as if you had 10 arms, and you had an arm here, and one here, and one here, so when you put your arms out, there were 5 arms on each side? Can you understand what a heck of a time you'd have when you went to shake hands with somebody? Trying to decide which hand you'd shake hands with? But can you visualize if you had these 10 arms, and that each arm represented a level of consciousness? There was the hand of hostility and the hand of judgment. And then at the top there was the hand of love. And down underneath was a hand of suspicion. Every time you shake hands with someone, really every time you see someone, you give forth a state of consciousness. And they respond in like kind. So if you shake hands with the top hand, if you take your top awareness and shake hands with an attitude of love, with non-judgment, without scrutinizing them to see how different or how much the same they are to you, you are beginning to practice love. You will discover it. You will discover it within every person you meet. And of course, this is what we must do. And this is what life, to me, is all about. Don't be a person of appearances. There is no relationship that can withstand the appearances of itself. Maybe it'll start out beautiful, but it can't stand. The only kind of person to be is the kind of person that has this dynamic energy flowing through them. It is God. It is the reality. It comes as you lift your thoughts up into the highest realm of thinking. It comes as you stop being judgmental. It comes as you stop trying to find anything the same as you, but you find a unity between you. You find that which is oneness in all people and in every experience. When you begin to see this, you begin to find what life is all about. And so, this morning, when we think just a few moments about rediscovering love, let us think about these simple words I've given you. But let us also think about the wonderful experiences, how many people are going to knock us down, and how we're going to get up in an attitude of love. Now let us pray. And let us give thanks for the love of God that makes itself known in our hearts right now. A love that flows out of us and fulfills our greatest need, not to be loved, but to allow love to flow through us into the world around us. For this we give thanks as we pray in the presence of Jesus Christ, the Master of Love. Amen.